Czechast, a podcast in English about Czech and Moravian society, history, culture and economy.
Hello and welcome to Czechast, a podcast in English about all things Czech. I'm Vít Pohanka and my guest today is Jan Lipavský, former Czech Minister of Foreign Affairs and now an opposition MP, non-partisan, elected on the Civic Democratic Party ticket. Already at the very start of his term, Lipavský says he had a clear idea of what Czech foreign policy had been missing.
So for me, the idea was to bring security back to Minister of Foreign Affairs. For many years, Czechia was neglecting the issue of security, and the diplomacy was perceived as something which served as a tool for companies to sell abroad. But this is not the purpose of diplomacy as such. Of course, it's an important task, and we have to pay attention to it, but security was my topic.
That emphasis on security stopped being theoretical just a few months later, when Russia attacked Ukraine. Lipavský remembers the moment he realized this was no longer a crisis in the making, but a war already underway in the early hours of the 24th of February 2022.
I got a call from my people that rockets are flying on Kyiv. It was a bad dream, and I was focused on evacuating our embassy from Kyiv, getting in touch with the Ukrainian ambassador here in Prague, and then the next day flying to Paris on the meeting with other European ministers of foreign affairs and from Asia, because it was a planned event. So basically I was filled with a lot of duties, basically.
Czechia would go on to become one of Ukraine's most active supporters, not only politically, but also militarily, starting Ammunition Initiative, which helps Ukraine significantly to defend itself.
We are stopping Vladimir Putin's imperialistic invasion into Ukraine and helping it, therefore, to our European and Czech security. Reason number two is that this initiative proved as a great source of prestige for Czechia.
So in this episode of Czechast, I sat down with Jan Lipavský at his home in Prague and we talked about how Czech foreign policy changed under pressure, about Ukraine, Israel and Gaza, about alliances, values and what it means to defend them in an increasingly unstable world.
Czechast, a podcast in English about all things Czech. Whether you're an English-speaking expat living in Czechia and Slovakia, or a descendant of the Czechs, Moravians and Slovaks who left for a better life in America, Australia, Britain or Canada so long ago that you don't speak the language of the old country, this podcast in English is for you.
My name is Jan Lipavský. I'm a proud citizen of Prague, of city of Prague, of Czechia. And I consider myself also proud European. I spent most of my time in private business on different positions in marketing and IT. And then I became politician. I was 4 years in Czech Chamber of Deputies as a member of different committees focused on security and foreign affairs. And then I became Minister of Foreign Affairs. And I served 4 years as a Minister of Foreign Affairs in the government of Petr Fiala. And now I am again elected into the Chamber of Deputies.
We'll get to your career, how you went from kind of private business or private sector into politics in a minute. But if I may ask you, you studied at Charles University, International Relations, as I understand.
Yeah.
And you spent some time in Britain at the University of Kent. What was it like? Where were you and what did it give you?
So at the time the UK was still part of the EU, so it was easy to use Erasmus program to study abroad. I took that opportunity and I spent 2 semesters at Canterbury University in Kent. And that was a very nice experience for me as a young person to meet new people from all over the Europe, which is an essential part of Erasmus pop your bubble and see the other nationalities and how they think and make friends there. And the British educational system was, of course, very, very good at the time. So I enjoyed the studying at the uni, and I liked it very much. Though Canterbury, it's a small city, a little bit sleepish.
Did you get to London often?
Not often, but I did, of course.
Just a little footnote, actually, quite recently, I was listening to the BBC. I think Britain is coming back to Erasmus program. So I think that's great news.
It's
great news, yeah.
It's great news, especially for young people who are now studying at the university, so they can apply to from the UK to travel across the Europe and vice versa.
On a personal note, let me just mention that I actually got to Britain in 1988, just before the fall of communism, as an exchange student to School of Slavonic and East European Studies in London. And for me, it was a huge kind of impulse, you know, it was a big change. You were there a little bit later, but did it kind of, you know, kick you? Did it give you this kind of kick as well?
I would not say so, but it's important to see different cultures and to enjoy something else than your home city. So definitely it was a very enriching experience.
So, as you mentioned, you worked in private businesses before going into politics. Of course, people can look it up, but which companies, what sort of companies you worked for, and why did you decide to go into politics?
So at the beginning of my career, I was switching quite a lot of companies I was working for. And those companies were focused on marketing. I was working for a big company called EuroRSCG, maybe now they are known as Havas. I was working for the McKinsey & Company, not as a consultant, but in administrative role. I was working for internet startup, then I spent the most of my time with a small software company doing IT systems for big banks and trading companies, stock exchanges. So I basically work as an analyst and team lead on different kind of projects. So I enjoyed a range of small and big companies, international Czech companies, marketing, IT systems, you know, things of big variety, but I enjoyed it very much. I spent 10 years of doing my private career, which is still longer than I am now being in politics. Soon it won't be a truth.
So why go into politics? And why Pirate Party,
to go into politics, it's some kind of your inner calling to change things for better, which definitely I always had. And of course, a big part of my political career is luck, because I was running in Prague at the time when Pirate Party was not polling much. But it turned out differently after elections, so I became an MP.
From my experience, sometimes it's difficult to explain why the party is called Pirate Party, what the pirates are about. I know it's pretty obvious for Czech voters, because the party is already very well established. It was a part of the coalition. But you entered the Pirate Party when it wasn't so well known. So how would you describe it? What was it like?
So I think it's fair to say to listeners that I already left the Pirate Party and I'm with the other party.
We will get to that, yeah.
So I'm not in a position to speak for them. At the time when I was joining Pirate Party, for me, it was focused on freedom, which was very strongly embodied in the policies of Pirate Party, which obviously comes from the environment of internet and freedom zone on the internet. So that was what I was. That was the policies which I was enjoying quite a lot.
And right, you are, of course. I mean, you already left the Pirate Party, but when you were entering, I mean, that was my perception. It was a party of young people, younger people than other political parties. Is that so?
I think this is true till today. Even though now I would say that the party moved more towards left and progressivist idea, which is not something which is suiting me as much as I would like to. So I'm not with them anymore.
I wanted to ask you later about this, but let me ask you now, because you mentioned, you know, that it's moving to the left, the Pirate Party. You know, when I look at the political spectrum these days, I personally had a problem when I was in the United States explaining that conservative parties, like, for example, even the British Conservative Party, they wouldn't dream of abolishing the general healthcare system, you know, compulsory for everyone, that under David Cameron already then, you know, many years ago, was for gay marriage or same-sex marriage, etc. And American conservatives could not kind of understand how can you call yourself a conservative when you have these views. And coming back to that, I just wonder, does the kind of category right and left still apply even in not just Czech, but European politics in general?
Okay, this is a very broad question. Where to start? So the typical left and right division of political scene is still present in Czech politics, in European politics, even in American politics, to say so. But it's not the only division which is there. And we have more axes. And there's also liberal conservative axis, which is very strong. And basically the parties you have in the politics are trying to position themselves on those axes. Also, we live in an era of the globalization, and there are losers from globalization. And for example, Brexit, it's one of the examples of that. Win of Donald Trump is definitely built partly on the fact that the losers of globalization in the USA want more protectionism from the government. So I don't know, the jobs and the wealth is not going outside of the USA. And we see the similar phenomena basically everywhere. So the politics is changing. The typical left and right division is still valid, but it's not something which would be the ultimate decision. And if you look at what is the Orbán policies, Orbán regime, for example,
Viktor Orbán's
regime, yeah. it's a combination of strong national policies and strong social state, basically leaning towards national socialism. I don't want to draw that parallel further, but so we are living in this time when the democracies has a lot of crisis. We also face the attack on the kind of institutions. So the typical boxes for political parties may not be valid now, but it doesn't mean that the politics loses relevancy or that the political fight would be losing relevancy. It's just a different politics than we are used to.
Now,
we were used to.
Back to 2021. So here you are. I think it was in December you become the foreign secretary or foreign minister of foreign affairs in Czech context. What was going through your head? I mean, what were your priorities? I mean, did you have priorities? Did you have to discuss that? Or did you have to kind of sit down and write it down for yourself, or at least mentally kind of, you know, set the priorities? Or was it more like, well, let's see what happens?
So for me, the idea was to bring security back to Ministry of Foreign Affairs. For many years, Czechia was neglecting the issue of security, and the diplomacy was perceived as something which serves as a tool for companies to sell abroad. But this is not the purpose of diplomacy as such. Of course, it's an important task, and we have to pay attention to it, but security was my topic. And the fact that a few months after I have entered into the Cherny Palace, the seat of the Czech diplomacy, Russia attacked Ukraine proved me right. And I was continuing this basically through my whole term.
How did you learn about the Russian attack, the full invasion rather, because Russia had attacked Ukraine already in 2014?
I got a call from my people that rockets are flying on Kyiv.
What went through your head? I mean, did you have to consult something, with the Prime Minister, or how did it go?
So, at the time, it was like the second time which the issue that Russia might attack was there. So for the first time, Russia did not attack. So actually, for the second time they did. It was a bad dream. I was focused on evacuating our embassy from Kyiv, getting in touch with the Ukrainian ambassador here in Prague, and then the next day flying to Paris on the meeting with other European ministers of foreign affairs and from Asia, because it was planned event. So basically I was filled with a lot of duties, basically.
Was it a good decision, by the way, I mean, to withdraw the Czech embassy from Kyiv? I mean, seeing from with the benefit of hindsight, because the British, I think, stayed there, the Poles stayed there.
At that time, it was the only way how to make sure that our people will be safe. And if I had the proper information sooner, or I would evacuate it sooner, rather than when the attack itself started. You know, at that time the notion was in 3 days we will be in Kyiv at Tessera. So no one knew that the Kyiv and Ukraine will stand. And when the real decision on how to proceed, when the lives of your diplomats are being at stake, I tended always to take the more conservative, more secure option rather than to say, okay, guys, stay there, you know, we will see. No, I didn't want to risk lives of my diplomats. And at that time, all the family members were back home. We had quite a low number of employees actually in Kyiv. So we were prepared for that.
What would you say was the biggest Czech contribution to help Ukraine to defend itself?
Weapons, ammunition. Weapons. Ammunition initiative. But Czechia was the first to send them tanks, rocket launchers. We provided them with attack helicopters, you know, many things. Maybe not ultimately in the amount of money or the amount of stockpile, but we always ranked at very good and fair position, and Czech position is very well understood. That put us into current political context when the current Czech government is not fond of continuing to send more money to Ukraine, which is very sad.
How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel that during my term I did everything I could, and now from the opposition I will push to continue. But of course, being in opposition and being in the government, it's quite a big difference.
You are listening to Czechcast, a podcast in English about all things Czech. I'm Vít Pohanka, and my guest today is Jan Lipavský, former Czech Minister of Foreign Affairs and now an opposition MP.
What is it like? Because, you know, we are not so far from the elections, and you quite recently had to leave the office of the foreign minister.
Yeah.
And now you are an MP. I believe you are the deputy chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee.
I'm not member of any committee. I will be elected because as a member of my academy, but soon I will be member of the Foreign Affairs Committee and European Committee.
What is it like?
I was there. I knew.
You were
Parliamentarian
there before 2021.
Yeah. Yes. And for me, it's a big relief that the pressure and the duties of being member of government are off for now. So I'm enjoying this kind of freedom. It may sound paradoxical, but it is like that. I enjoy that.
For us people who have never been in government position, I'm just trying to picture it on kind of human side. What does that mean? You have to be on the phone all the time. You have to be ready, you know, that someone calls. You have to do something or sign something. Or how does it work?
I would not say that you have to do something. I would say that you want to do something. Mm-hmm. Because you are in a position when you can change things, which ultimately leads to conclusion, okay, I have the responsibility to make at best as I can. At least this is the way how I see the duty of the member of government. And of course, there's a lot of people, a lot of things which want to deal something with you. a lot of interests which are trying to influence you. So it's a constant pressure. It's a constant pressure, and it's nice work. It's a very responsible work, but you have to have a mandate for it. So once we lose the election, it was clear that we will be leaving. Until that, I was really striving to do as much as possible for the good work of Czech diplomacy, for the security in the given environment.
You already mentioned the ammunition initiative. Again, if some of the listeners who might be listening abroad, how did it come about? The ammunition initiative.
Okay, the ammunition initiative is it's a way how other countries can donate Ukraine ammunition to the Czech state and the Czech industry, which is very efficient at producing large amounts of ammunition. And in a very specific context of February 2024, there was a crisis in Ukraine because Ukraine lacked ammunition into big guns, 155, 152 millimeters. The production capacities in European countries were low, and Czechia and our government come up with a solution that other states will provide money and our industry will buy those shells abroad, in countries in Africa, maybe in Balkans, you know. We don't speak much about that. Because there was quite a lot of ammunition worldwide. We had this specific know-how that we could deliver it, or the companies could deliver, but with the help of the Czech state. And it proved to be the right thing, because quite soon the ammunition started flowing to Ukraine. And before the ammunition initiative call, for every 10 Russians round, there was only one Ukrainian. Ratio was 10 to 1.
Yeah.
And after Czech ammunition initiative kicked in, it's for two shells, one Ukrainian shell, which is basically not the equal amount, but really we changed the ratio and we saved Ukrainian frontline in this way.
Imagine now that you are speaking to Czech citizens, Czech voters. Why is that important? Why should Czechia be involved in that and help Ukraine? It may seem to be pretty obvious, the answer, but let me ask you.
For Czech citizens, there are three reasons. Number one, we are stopping Vladimir Putin's imperialistic invasion into Ukraine and helping it, therefore, to our European and Czech security. Reason number two is that this initiative proved as a great source of prestige for Czechia. I have been to meetings in NATO, in the EU, where many member states around the table praised and mentioned Czech ammunition initiative. I have never been witness to anything like that. So the source of prestige for our country is something really, really good. And of course, $4 billion of US dollars were fundraised through this initiative during 2 years. And some of those money stays also in Czechia in the form of taxation and people getting being paid for their jobs. So definitely this is not the main reason why we would be doing these things, but this is also beneficial to Czechia. So therefore I'm quite sad when the current government is questioning the Czech ammunition initiative, but hopefully they will keep it that somehow.
Again, we will get to that.
Yeah.
Also, what you see in the future and perhaps what you expect from the present government. But let me ask you about Israel and Gaza, another huge issue during your time as foreign minister, ever since the 7th of October 2023. Czechia has been a very staunch ally and very strong supporter, I would say, for Israel. Even when other European countries started hesitating because of what was happening in Gaza and a lot of civilians were being killed, Did you have any doubts? I mean, you know, that perhaps we shouldn't be so strong. I'm not saying that that Czech Republic shouldn't, you know, support Israel, but perhaps that we should also put some accent on, put some stress on, you know, saying, what are you doing? I mean, why are you killing so many people?
I had never had any doubt that Israel must have a way to defend itself from terrorists who want to destroy it. And during the time when the war in Gaza raged, basically this notion in me only grew stronger. Even though it's a huge human tragedy in Gaza, it doesn't mean that the Israel should be left options to defend itself. And at the end of the day, Hamas basically released those hostages. And now we have some kind of peace or coexistence in Gaza with Hamas and Israel, but definitely hostilities, the main hostilities are over. But it doesn't mean that we should not call the international law to be applied, international humanitarian law to be applied, or that any action which Israel does, it's totally okay. Definitely this was never a Czech position. But on the other side, we were never being pushed to, let's say, unnecessarily criticize Israel.
So you never faced, some sort of pressure from other European EU colleagues, for example, when you were meeting at GERG, the general, you know, the meeting that you have always
I was facing different kind of pressures, for example, when different kind of discussion on sanctions or some kind of conclusions were in motion. But I was communicating this topic quite clearly to other partners, so they knew what is our position. But it doesn't mean that we would be vetoing everything, absolutely not. For example, we supported even sanction against the settlers in the West Bank, which I think it's wrong activities. Those activities are wrong. So the Czech policy towards Israel is measured. And I would say this is one of the few things in Czech politics when we have a strong consensus across almost all political parties.
Let me ask you slightly personally. I've got two kids. One of them is a teenager. The other one is in early 20s. And we were discussing it. And just to sum it up, I mean, the situation in Gaza. And they said, well, the Israel is committing war crimes because so many, you know, civilians are dying. And I said, well, frankly, probably they are. I mean, I'm not an expert. And they would ask me, you know, is it okay that Czech Republic supports Israel under such circumstances? What would you tell young people like that?
I would tell the same thing which telling everyone during my term. The war in Gaza was brutal. That's clear. But it was Hamas which started it and which was unwilling to resolve it peacefully. And for the Israel government, it was the only option how to conduct against them. So those who is hiding behind civilian infrastructure and people, those are the terrorists from Hamas. And it's painful to see it, but it's also too painful to see what the Hamas was doing to Israelis when they were able to catch them unprepared and basically killing innocent people. So there is no good solution to that. It's not something which would be filling you with joy, but this is the reality of the current world. It is like that. And ultimately, everyone understood that Hamas has to release the hostages and the war. Everyone told it to Hamas, from the Americans, Egyptians, Saudis, and they did it so. But it took Israel to occupy half of Gaza, half of the Gaza Strip, for the Hamas to realize that they are not able to win it. And for 2 years they were able to grip, for example, the media narrative very well with many campaigns. It is like that.
Just one last question about your time as a foreign minister. What was the hardest moment during the 4 years there?
Definitely at the beginning of the Russo-Ukraine war. Evacuations of our embassies, being from Kiev or Damascus when there was a regime change in Syria. Those, I would say, are the personally most difficult moments for me when I leave the politics and things connected to being in politics.
Okay, so now here you are, opposition MP.
Yeah.
I suppose kind of freer in a way because you are not tied by,
I was selected on a list of Civic Democratic Party, ODS, a member of the parliamentary club, and I work with them. So let's say that I don't have the party duties.
Yeah, there's a little side question. How does that work? I mean, you were elected on their candidate list,
yeah,
but you are not a member of the party. But you are a member of a club of the Civic Democratic Party. So how come you are not tied by partisanship?
It takes a lot of time. I don't have to spend it with it. That's the point. But, I work on the issues of foreign affairs and security affairs. I think it's quite clear what are the position of Civic Democratic Party and my colleagues, and we know.
So your colleagues don't tell you, hey, look, Jan, you were elected on our list, so come on, become a member, become one of us, or something like
we
that.
We are having those discussions, but not pushing it much forward. Civic Democratic Party will be picking a new leader soon, so things is to organize a little bit to work in opposition after 4 years of government.
I don't want to be too specific, but have you got your favorites when it comes to the leadership of Civic Democratic Party?
I think it will be Martin Kupka.
Okay, basically what I wanted to ask you, now that you are in opposition, if you were, to kind of draw a wish list, to write down a wish list, or, when it comes to foreign policy of the Czech Republic, from your point of view, I don't know whether wish list is a good word, but something that you would wish, for the Czech Republic to do, what would be the main pillars? What would be the things that you think Czech Republic should do?
Czechia is middle-sized European country. And for us to be a safe and prosperous place, we must be active in the EU and in NATO. We have to fulfill our obligations into invest into our defense and also invest into our science and technologies. So those are also my priorities. I will be working on them.
I just wonder if I may have this kind of person. We now have the Speaker of the House, Tomio Okamura, who probably wouldn't agree with you when it comes to cooperation with the EU countries, to put it mildly, even the membership of NATO. And here you are at the beginning of four-year term, probably, if there's no crisis or something like that, when the leadership of the parliament is like that. What goes through your head? I mean, when you sit down and there's the Speaker of the House.
So I was not voting for him. Mm-hmm. I think it's a mistake that he was selected as a head of parliament. And he already proved multiple times that he has still this kind of mentality of head of the small extremist party rather than someone who is trying to be a persona speaking on behalf of the whole parliament as a Speaker of the House is supposed to connect even different kind of voices, at least to be respectful. He's at the highest ranking constitutional politician, having constitutional duties at some points. I'm quite disappointed with his actions, but not surprised.
So, I suppose last question. What do you expect from the next few years? Are there any expectations that you have, or do you think it will be more or less business as, I don't want to say, cynically business as usual, but okay, I mean, there will probably be some bumps on the road, but...
It won't be business as usual. The war in Europe is still raging and it's not over. And it's absolutely not clear what the end will be and how it will look like. The question for Czechia is where we will be standing as a country. Do we will be standing on the side of victory with other Europeans, big countries, or do we lose our faith and will join Slovakia, Hungary? That will be the biggest political fight. Domestically, probably, you know, things will go on as business as usual, but this big geopolitical things will influence us very much. And I do not wish it, but we also might be witnesses to some geopolitical tensions in Indo-Pacific. So the global confrontation goes on, and we need strong Czechia with strong allies rather than isolated Czechia with weak allies.
Well, Jan Lipavský, thank you very much for your time and for inviting me to your home.
Thank you very much for this interview.
So that was my conversation with Jan Lipavský, a politician who helped shape Czech foreign policy during one of the most turbulent periods in recent European history. Thank you for listening to this episode of Czechcast. If you enjoyed it or any other episode of the podcast, please remember to click on the like button, follow it, or share it with a friend. It really helps us bring you more conversations like this about Czechia and its place in the world. And let me add that you will find many more stories, interviews, and news about Czechia at radio.cz. Thanks for listening once again. I'm Vít Pohanka. Stay healthy, stay safe, stay curious. And until next time, as we say in Czech, naslyšenou.
Czechcast, a podcast in English about all things Czech. Whether you're an English-speaking expat living in Czechia and Slovakia, or a descendant of the Czechs, Moravians and Slovaks who left for a better life in America, Australia, Britain or Canada so long ago that you don't speak the language of the old country, this podcast in English is for you.